Oh, hey, it's the Great Debates.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
It's happening.
It's happening. Guys, we're observing an annual tradition today.
A tradition unlike any other. We've got guests here. Let's just introduce
Healy,
them.
I want you here as part of the program.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I was afraid to talk because it would all come out at once.
Okay, great. Well, do you guys want to welcome our special guest that we have here?
I'll take a turn, and then Dave can take a turn welcoming a guest.
Great idea.
So sitting to my right is comedian, author, tech startup founder, BJ Novak.
Hey.
BJ, welcome.
I've been so excited to talk. I was just waiting for that intro.
I love it.
Who you got?
And sitting to my left, musician, I would say comedian, performer, entrepreneur, all-around good dude, John Mayer.
Yes. Thank you. That's awesome. This is the third year in a row we've had them for a Christmas holiday tradition.
I'm already looking forward to next year.
Oh, yeah. Man.
I've already started thinking of it.
Let's just do next year's right now.
Well, why don't we do this year's?
Okay, that's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, let's start.
Okay, yeah.
Guys, I'd like to get right into it with the micro debate.
That's how we do it.
Yeah. I have one.
Okay, yeah.
In this debate, John's going to take the pro.
Okay.
Steve's going to take the con.
Okay.
I'm going to put 4 minutes on the clock.
Sure.
This is a one-on-one?
This is a head-to-head. We're going to do a number of different combinations of various battles, but we're going to start with a head-to-head John versus Steve.
I'm so nervous.
I wouldn't want to be in this
one. We just wrapped up a glorious holiday season, I'd like to think.
Okay.
And so we're going to debate a Christmas topic, because why not? The topic is, John taking the pro, 4 minutes on the clock, Christmas is sad.
Are we off and running?
Yeah, go.
Very few Christmases have to do with authoring great memories. Most Christmases have to do with reflecting on great memories. That, in and of itself, is sad, to look back on a perfectly good Christmas, to look back on other better Christmases. The music of Christmas is usually even sadder than that. Silent Night is a song that you memorialize the dead with. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, a song that ostensibly wishes joy, is one of the saddest compositions ever written. It, in fact, I would think, is almost sarcastic. It's so far out in terms of how sad it is that it's sarcastic. And I would also say one need only ask themselves, if you're listening, were you a little sad this Christmas? And I think the answer is going to be, yeah, you know, I didn't get to see this person or that person. And I know a lot of people waiting for the holiday to be over. You would have had to have been proposed to on Christmas morning to be able to say that Christmas was awesome this year. And that's why I think all in, Christmas is sad.
Okay, John, beautiful argument. I've heard you talk about some of these themes before. I agree that in its rich pageant, one of the elements in the Christmas recipe is a dose of melancholy. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is a melancholy song, but it also contains with it the seed of joy and being together. Now, take a step back from the sort of gloomy, melancholy reflection that John offered you and go back to what Christmas really is. Kids screaming for presents. Everybody's home. Mama's made a pie. There's ice cream. There's every kind of sweet. Maybe it's cold outside and you can go sledding. People have returned to the home. Sure, it's traveling is stressful. There's all kinds of burdens and problems. But all told, Christmas is a happy time, a joyous time. It's a time when you go back home. You see your old friends. Think about what you did this Christmas. Sure, maybe you reflected on joys of Christmas past. But I'd argue that's joyous, not sad, to reflect on joy that you've already had isn't sad. It's kind of uplifting and inspiring. Yeah, if you're the kind of cynical person who looks on past joy and thinks only of like how this year is coming up short, then yeah, Christmas could be a bit melancholy. But even then, I bet you're having a drink, you're having some eggnog, you're an office Christmas party. And remember, I think we're talking here not just about Christmas Day and Christmas morning, but Christmas the idea, Christmas the concept, the anticipation, the buildup, the getting the presents, the holiday party, the time off. For heaven's sakes, just the vacation is happy and valuable and fun. Also, like, a third of people who are experiencing Christmas are kids who are 100% happy. So right there, like, all I have to do is get the middle-aged and elderly people. Elderly people are grandparents. They're having a great time. Middle-aged people are where John's talking about. They're having a little bit of melancholy reflection about Christmas. But really, I think they're enjoying the joy of Christmas.
What about the elderly sitting, watching a projection screen television where one of the color bulbs is out, wondering when the phone call is going to come in? What about, I mean, I think you've lost touch with the every person.
Okay, here. And then the call comes. Hello? It's my grandma's Lisa.
And it's a shoe.
I got a new bike.
Who?
It's who? Lisa. It's me.
I think it's a hopeful outlook you have, but it's just not, it's not the realistic one.
Guys, I ask yourself to think back on whether your Christmas was happy, sad, or a mix of happy and melancholy that altogether comes out as a happy, joyful occasion.
Wow. I've never heard a debate wrapped up so beautifully before.
I know. I really thought
it was
I
a little unfair. You gave two options of the three that were happy. You didn't give the fourth, which was a mixed result that came out on the side of melancholy. Right. Yeah. Happy, or sad, or a mixture that's happy.
I couldn't help but think that this beautiful picture you were painting of everyone coming home was sort of being listened to in this sort of echoey reverb of loneliness that it was someone's flashback, but that they were actually in a train station somewhere thinking back on when that had happened.
They're in Penn Station slogging back to their one bedroom.
If you were to do a listener poll that determined the winner of this, why I think it's a close call, is if you told people, all right, when you hear this, check your gut reaction. Just listen to your gut, split second. Next year, Christmas is canceled. A lot of people would be so sad. A lot of people so
great
relieved.
Argument I left on the table.
Well, I would argue that John Grisham did this in his novel adapted for the screen, Christmas with the Cranks, wherein the family decides to cancel Christmas.
Was that John Grisham?
Yes, of course.
Huh.
Yeah, was there a legal angle?
No, the family decides they're going to skip Christmas. They're canceling Christmas that year.
Huh.
And no one sues over this?
Nothing.
No, it's just one family. You can't sue a family for
it's
deciding
funny that
they're
you understand
not
why I'm asking.
Yeah.
This is not John Grisham's wheelhouse, what you're describing.
You're right.
It's funny
and
that you're
probably talking the way the executive of the meeting was talking, which is, and then they go to court.
I don't think
and then Santa's the judge.
Now I got to look this up.
I don't like, think stop that. It. That is not where this goes.
I don't think this validity test where you ask yourself if Christmas was canceled, would you be happy, holds water. Because there is always a hope that Christmas is going to be great, but one need only get about a day or two into the Christmas season to get a real good litmus test.
I'm going to turn this around. This is a pro. This is on your side, John, because we're good friends, right?
Yes,
let's say we make a dinner plan tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. I call you that day, and I was like, I got to cancel.
Bummed.
Yeah, part of you is happy.
Why?
You're always happy when it's like any
I hear this.
Any engagement on the calendar is
you're freed
free.
Up.
It's
yes.
just a natural thing that we always want everything to be
you're
clear.
Right, but however.
Even Christmas, maybe especially Christmas because it's so big.
Christmas is canceled has a certain psychic weight unto itself that is worth more than the sum of its words by way of how
publicly,
negative.
Publicly, everyone will be sad to hear that. In a movie, in Christmas with the Cranks, I'm sure that's negative, but if you were to say that, a lot of people secretly would be like, oh,
well,
that's
I don't
good.
Think you unpack it. I think you just go. I think you have a visceral reaction to it. If I said to you, the holiday season is going to come and go, and you won't have to buy presents. If you unpack it, that it's a little unfair to say Christmas is canceled.
Right.
You go
the holidays
right
are just if not going to happen.
Let's say you're in a new relationship. You're so happy, and she on December 23rd turns to you and says, "What do you say we just blow off Christmas this year?"
It's amazing. That's amazing.
That's good.
That's amazing. But so you're trading up, though.
You wouldn't be like, no.
But that's you're a little different. That is a little different than Christmas is canceled. That to me implies like something like.
Well, also
on
like
on a global level, like something terrible.
I'm not on either side of this debate.
No, I understand.
I'm throwing
if
out
she blows off Christmas, it's because the two of you like you're going out to on a vacation.
Oh,
trust me. Like,
it'll be Christmas, and it'll be a Christmas you'll never forget.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
It's just
she's proposing something that she's confident is better than Christmas. So it is a pro Christmas argument.
Can I lament
that's
something?
True. Please.
I've had a lot of success in my life and certainly no reason to go back and want to rewrite things. There's one moment in my life I wish I had and I'll never have it. And some would say thankfully and I would agree. I wish that I had a girlfriend from the time I was like 22 years old and she was working in a hospital and I was writing music and we didn't have a lot of money but we had a little tiny Christmas tree. with a couple of lights on it. And I wish I had that moment in my life where we were not rich in money, but we had a lot of love, and we had a little janky Christmas tree, mm-hmm. and we sat down, and we had Chinese food, and we played, and the power went out or something, or I didn't pay the water. We had to, like, we had to get bottled water. Just some adversity story with a little Christmas tree and an AM radio.
You're talking about a different John Grisham story. This is The Firm. When they first moved to Memphis, and they barely got anything, but they're scraping it together. They got their dogs in the back of the station wagon. They take the job with The Firm.
I wish I had that.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying.
You wish you were more Firm and less Christmas with the Cranks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My take Polite
But Firm was the name of the book.
My take on this debate is going to be that while Healy kind of successfully argued that Christmas is emotionally mixed, John, I think you successfully argued that it's actually sad, and so I'm going to give you this one.
He admitted it was sad.
And some people like that sadness. I think there's a power to that sadness now that I've won. I think there's a power. I think it's a necessary psychological sort of trip to take.
If you said, I saw this movie, it was sad, that doesn't mean it's bad.
I love This Is Us, and I cry on the previously on clips. I cry before the actual cold open, and I love it. It's to me, it's very cathartic. I like the sadness of things sometimes, but there's also a completely loaded sadness in Christmas that is almost masochistic.
It's hard to argue with the power of the song "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas."
Oh, it's crazy.
It's just like crushing.
It seems as if there was one day an up-tempo "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas," and then there was the alternate version after somebody died, and they lost the original up-tempo "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas," and this is the one after a funeral. This was the adapted, because it seems like based on the lyrics, it should be like, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas."
Maybe you should do that version.
From now on, may all you live a better life.
This is good.
And have yourself a merry little. That would be wonderful, and that would actually work way against my point.
But, yeah, that was
but
great.
You just
That's
came up with
that.
Yeah.
And then you get
Mariah
then you get a
Carey
D-Y.
Level hit.
Yeah. You get thrown into the slammer, and it's "Have yourself." There would be two songs on the cast recording.
What about a down-tempo "Rocking Around the Christmas Tree"? It's like...
Yeah.
Or Jingle Bells. You know, you'd also not just down-tempo it, you'd change the scale, like the mode of the scale. So it'd be like, "Rocking around the Christmas tree, have a Christmas party." It'd be really dark. You have to dirge it.
Don't hesitate to sing the whole version of this. That was gorgeous.
Don't hesitate to turn
but you,
this.
But you couldn't be
just talking
you
into
want.
Using.
You'd have
Christmas
to turn
songs.
It into minor. You'd have to do something, because otherwise you'd still be in a major key, which I would have been like happy versus sad.
Little pitch for the title: White Christmas / Blue Christmas.
Ooh,
yeah, I don't know. First thought, something we can work on.
That's nice.
Blue Christmas is kind of a happy song. They didn't get what they were nailing for on that one. Yeah.
It's an Elvis song in the spirit of Hawaii. That's right. That's up tempo.
Yeah, that's an upbeat song.
I read
right?
Elvis's obituary today. Huh. If we're doing recommendations,
cool.
I got the New York Times Book of the Dead, which is their collection of obituaries.
Awesome.
I read Elvis. It was a mean-spirited negative review.
Really?
Not review. Yeah, it was
review
sort of a review of his life. Yeah. It was sort
Two
of like,
stars.
I maybe back when, maybe it's still going on now, but pop culture figures are disparaged by sort of cultural elite.
Interesting.
It was not celebrating Elvis's life. It was kind of not mocking it, but it sort of treated him as a pathetic figure. It really dwelled on his box office failures in the movies. I was very surprised.
Do you think part
a
of
veteran.
That is because like
the a veteran
just mm-hmm. because like he happened to die at a time in
at
his,
an embarrassing point of his life
in
yeah.
an embarrassing way at a bad at like a sort of the
That's
glitzy
a great point.
Fat Elvis. I mean, I'm not an Elvis historian. I don't know much about him, but it seems like he had peaks and valleys, and like most people, his death came during a valley.
I read both the Elvis biographies, the Peter Grelnick two-volume thing.
You
My
are
old camp counselor,
Elvis
by
historian.
The way. I'm Peter pretty Grelnick. Serious about Elvis. And Elvis himself did feel, he had a feeling that he'd blown it somehow. Partly the movies he thought were junk, and he'd spent a lot of time doing stuff that he knew wasn't high quality.
BJ, do you think there's going to be a time in your life where you're going to really discover Elvis and have an help? Do you feel an Elvis phase somewhere in your life?
I have a fascination. I had an Elvis phase when I wrote my book, One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. There are two stories focused on Elvis as a pop culture figure. I'm like, I'm mesmerized by Elvis the way I'm mesmerized by Coca-Cola. I love an American brand. The music, I am not. I like it a little bit, but no.
Didn't
John,
know.
If you believe that Tarantino, the Tarantino dictum, you're either an Elvis person or a Beatles person. Mm-hmm. Which are you?
I would, interestingly enough,
or maybe you don't believe in that.
No, Well, in this world, I want to believe in it. Okay. Let's say that this is...
We're in the great debates. Firm, we take stands
here.
There's
a firm gravitational thing. I bet you if I learned more about Elvis, I'd be an Elvis guy. But
you only because of his look a little.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Only because of the rhythm and blues element, I think I don't want to just write off Elvis because I can sense that at some point in my life I'll discover it. I feel like there's a bookmark in Elvis for me down the line. And I think if I had to pick in the binary between Elvis and the Beatles, I would go Elvis because I think there's some R&B, some blues, some gospel.
It's closer to your DNA.
Closer
to
that than sort of Baroque, classical, sort of angular composition stuff. But then again, they're also rock and roll too. But I would probably be more an Elvis guy. And again, I'm just leaving some room for me to discover. You know, that's actually a really interesting question. What is your blind spot? And I guess I would ask musicians what their musical blind spot is. But would you ask people who are in television and film what their... who? Maybe it works more in music no matter who you talk to. The one band, and you're not slagging them at all, but you just have to admit you know the least about... the biggest band you know the least about.
Okay, I like that.
What's the biggest band you know the least
Before
about?
Before you toured with the Grateful Dead and I saw you, I would have said the Grateful Dead. Okay. Mm.
A lot of people,
because it's a huge cultural movement, and I just know nothing about it. Because it's also an independent thing.
Right.
It doesn't overlap with other things as much as bands that big do.
And it lacks a point of entry for people to just dive into. Yeah. You can go to the store.
They don't have that big hit.
Yeah, you can get Beatles number one and just start tearing away at it. And there's you don't really quite know which door to open to get into the Dead. So you would say Grateful Dead is the...
Well, now I know it a little more, but yeah, I would have said that, yeah.
Do you have a
Steely Dan? I don't know. I don't know.
That's the
about.
Biggest band?
Rush.
Yeah, like Boston, Chicago. Yeah. I don't know what any of these bands
are. I was going to say, excluding like current huge bands that I know, because I could say whatever, like the Lumineers or I don't know, whatever. But it, like classic, I would have said, for me, it's either like Pink Floyd or Led Zeppelin.
Pink Floyd's my answer.
I never got I never got into Floyd. I can name six songs, and if I hear them once in a while, I'm like, okay. But just something about
it
never rang, didn't hook into me.
Yeah, I could name you four Pink Floyd songs. And again, it's not saying you don't like it. It's just never, I don't know of anyone who's gotten into all of it.
Medina?
Oh, Fish.
Fish is a good answer.
I don't know a single Fish song.
Am I incorrect that Fish was kind of a New England-y phenomenon? Like, I couldn't have not gone to Fish shows in high school. I wasn't trying to, and I ended up at
I've been to a Fish show. I still couldn't name a Fish song. One Fish show.
Dan's been to 40 Fish shows.
He's kind of a casual fan. Guys, I'm going to feel terrible if we don't have another debate.
Let's do another debate. I'm going to pit Dave against BJ here.
Finally.
If that's okay.
Get in the ring, bud.
Kennedy Nixon.
Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Dave, you're going to take the pro.
Finally.
I'm going to put 4 minutes on the clock. The topic, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
The pro is not your strength.
No. No, historically.
You're going to do great.
Terrible at the pro.
I think you're going to do great. The topic is Snoop, and we're talking about Snoop Doggy Dog, but I think he's just called Snoop nowadays. Snoop is happy.
Well, of course Snoop Dogg is happy. This is one of these debates where BJ is going to try to overthink this and kind of work around the obvious, but of course Snoop Dogg is happy. Why is he happy? First of all, he's a performer. He performs regularly. He gets the endorphin rush and the adrenaline and all of the joy that comes from performing on a regular basis. As my colleague John can tell you, there's no greater high or joy in life. I can even tell you that as a member of my jazz ensemble from high school. After you play, you feel fantastic. Here's a guy who has disparate interests. He is sucking the marrow of life. Not only does he love music, he loves sports, he loves family. He is interested in everything from, he has radio shows, he's an entrepreneur, he's got businesses. This is also a guy who makes a lot of jokes. He has a sense of humor. I've met Snoop Dogg. I've filmed comedy shorts with Snoop Dogg. He's always cracking wise. He loves to have a good time. He coaches his own children at sports. He's engaged in his family and family life in the community. Here's one of the most important things I want to say about Snoop Dogg. This is a guy who is really taking the challenge of meeting people who have disparate interests and working with them. He's got a TV show with Martha Stewart. Who would have put those two together other than Snoop himself? He likes it when cultures and people collide and you find new ways of making art or TV or music. And for all of those reasons and more, and the fact that he smokes a ton of weed, Snoop Dogg is happy.
All of your arguments are obvious fallacies that are so elementary to fall into that I'm going to pick them apart before I even get to the con arguments. You are using the pro argument that this person is happy by saying musicians are happy. People that crave enormous amounts of public approval are happy. People that seek out careers in comedy are happy. People that do a ton of drugs are happy because the results of all of these things are those people end up happy. Dave, these are what people do famously to get away from some sadness that they can never fully escape. You're describing someone who seeks out enormous arenas of cheering fans, is obsessed with comedy, does a notorious amount of drugs. Even among weed smokers, it's frightening how much drugs he consumes publicly. Mm-hmm. What is he running from? A lot of his friends have been shot to death. He's been on trial for first-degree murder.
Well, that was the case that they gave him, but he got away with it. And I'd like to say also that this is not a guy who seeks the spotlight as much as you might think. In fact, one of the things that's the...
He was thrust into the spotlight?
In fact, I would say, yes, here's a guy who was plucked from obscurity from the LBC. He was Dr. Dre's protege at the beginning. This is not a guy who seeks the spotlight in the same way that a Kanye or even I would say a Jay-Z does. In fact, one of the hallmarks of Snoop's career is that he's often the featured guest on a song or a more popular artist. If you look at an example like the Up and Smoke tour, he was able to share the stage happily so with up to a dozen other performers, and he does that regularly. He'll perform, he's very happy to perform at festivals or in concert with other performers. He doesn't need to be the headliner. He doesn't even need to be the headliner
on
individual songs.
He's just desperate to be in that zone.
He likes to sing. He likes to rap. He likes to sing. He likes to smoke weed. He likes to play sports, and he gets to do all of those things. And more importantly, you have to just look at the guy on his, think of all the interviews, the behind the scenes. If you watch the behind the scenes footage of the Up and Smoke tour, there's no one happier than Snoop Dogg. This is a guy who's reveling in the mundane, even just the tour bus, the basketball that they get to play the pickup games. Look at the video for Nothing But a G Thing. This is a guy just having a good time no matter where he is. He doesn't need the spoils and the riches of life to be happy. He was happy before he hit it big.
He was happy before he hit it big.
I think
so. What is his music about? How happy he is? What's his music about?
Sometimes it's about beautiful girls. Sometimes it's about marijuana. Sometimes it's about gin and juice. Sometimes it's about California girls. Sometimes it's about someone else's song. Sometimes it's about bringing something. Did I hear the alarm go off?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a very hot debate.
You came harder, but I think you were playing against yourself here. You were saying all the escapist tendencies this man has. What is he like the other 23 hours a day?
Medina, what's the same?
You know, BJ, I thought you brought some really strong stuff to this debate, but I was so overwhelmed by Dave's knowledge of Snoop. And yeah, I mean, from my takeaway is that the guy seems pretty happy.
Look, we don't go easy on the guests.
No.
A lot of people say, oh, you're going to bring the guests on, you're going to take the gloves off. No, I'm not going to have it here.
Argument I felt was left on the table, Snoop Dogg is like middle-aged.
Mm.
Like middle-aged men tend to get grumpy, grouchy.
I had that in my notes.
Yeah. I was going to go the other way and say a middle-aged guy has sort of seen it all. He's sort of... Huh? Certain needs have sort of been cauterized and they're sort of cut
not as hungry
off.
Anymore.
He's kind of happy. He's got a closed loop of sorts.
What age do you think someone is happiest?
Six.
Yeah.
Six is the best answer. Six really
is good.
Six is good.
I didn't even think of six.
Six is the best answer.
I mean,
22.
I was happiest.
No,
actually, I wasn't even.
No, there's a lot
six.
Of...
Six. I was happier at six.
There's a lot of
my life at 22.
Friction. There's a lot of friction at 22.
I mean, a lot of six-year-olds are upset and afraid.
Yeah, but they're not, like, thinking about existential crises.
But they've got a monster under their bed, you know?
Well, only for like a half hour a day.
The reason
when they're
it's easy to say six is because there's a lot more uniformity to the life experience at six. Once you start getting into, it's almost like a V that just keeps going outward and outward. It's too difficult to say at 47 years old if somebody.
Yeah, no one's I remember 47.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't get uniform. But at six, most people are in a school system. Most people have. They sort of follow this run of show, and at six, you're probably at this perfect equilibrium between. wonder and also tactile. And I think that that's, I remember that.
Fair, but like, a lot of 6-year-olds burst into tears a lot.
Yeah, but not as much as like 4-year-olds.
I wasn't just
a stab in the dark at six. I think it's a pretty good time.
I miss, you know what? I'd like to burst into tears more. And the This Is Us, Merry Little Christmas.
Could be New Year's, Rez.
Yeah.
A lot of what we're talking about reminds me of, have you guys seen the movie Old Joy? Anybody seen the movie
Old Joy? Yes, what a great movie.
Well, one of the themes or sort of the like reason for the title is that there's cultures or sort of a school of thought that says that pain and sorrow is just old joy. It's joy in our bones that has just had time to age and becomes sadness over time. Is there something that connects
everything? Yes. Like the premise of what?
Lost Christmases.
That's the premise of a movie?
Well, it's not the premise, but it's a. There's a movie called Old Joy with Will Oldham, the musician. He goes out into the woods with his old friend. They try to reconnect. His old friend, one friend.
This is a documentary?
No. I think it's a Kelly Reichardt
movie. Dave tried to talk me into watching this movie, and I watched the trailer, and it was the most boring 2 minutes I've ever seen. I thought it was unbelievable.
It's a slow, ponderous movie, I'm not going to lie, but I thought it was
fantastic. It's a festival film.
This is coming from a guy who reads Christopher Columbus books.
I'm into slow, ponderous.
Right. Healy, are we going to play a game?
Yeah, we should have some host chat / fun and games.
I mean, we like to play games in the Great Debate.
I've been trying to make host chat into more of a fun and games, like limbering up activity for debating.
Okay, what do you got?
So this is a game called Long or Short. I got the idea from some guys I know who are in the finance business who, you go long on a stock, you go short on a stock. Mm-hmm. Long is like you think it's going to be great, put your money in it. Short is like, get out now. Or even buy an option to buy it less. You think it's done. So guys, we're going to go long or short.
Okay.
First up, CrossFit. CrossFit, long or short?
Huh.
I'm short. I think that these things come and go very fast. And you could have asked the question, is CrossFit still cool? Whereas you couldn't ask that about running. You couldn't ask that about weightlifting. So I say short.
I was never a buyer.
Not buying, yeah.
I'll go long on CrossFit.
Really?
Yeah, I see more and more people doing it. I think it has a good shot to become the dominant thing in its space over the long haul.
Uh-huh.
I think it has a toehold already in the sort of fitness space, and it has a chance to grow over time. We may think it's past its peak because we're very conscious of it in LA, but I think it could
maybe
grow.
Maybe it hasn't even gotten.
That's a good point.
I have no idea. I also just thought
that
someone
might be
should
the kind of
long.
Thing you could literally buy stock in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so, and you could go long.
I don't even know what CrossFit is, and I know what a lot of like fitness activities are. Whether
but it
it's
also
Pilates
depends on
yoga
how,
bodies
has anyone
or
here
bar
done
or
it?
Whatever. But
oh God, has
I don't know what CrossFit is.
Because you know, like. SoulCycle, I would have thought that. I would be short on that, except that keeps growing.
I'm long on SoulCycle.
Because SoulCycle, they realized what they can expand based on. They have a core essence, which is sort of spirituality and aerobic exercise and music and branding, and they can keep growing from that.
Well, so maybe explain what CrossFit is.
Maybe CrossFit can do that.
Yeah, CrossFit is like you have a gym that's called a box.
Mm-hmm.
There's a WOD, workout of the day, which is like some kettlebells, some push-ups, whatever.
Well, I'm long on kettlebells.
It's a lot of kettlebell, a lot of sort of like
good.
Strength and conditioning and mixed rotating exercises, doing five or six things over the course of like an hour. Everybody, you can show up and do it whenever.
Yeah, I'm long.
That's CrossFit.
Group social exercise, I'm never long on.
All right. Are we long or short Tesla?
Oh, long.
This one is actually like a stock you can buy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I own Tesla stock.
I own Tesla as well. I'm long.
I'm long on Tesla.
All long on Tesla.
I just think there's a good chance they, you know, revolutionize more than just the car industry.
Exactly.
Those Here's my problem with Tesla.
Dan, you're a car
the
guy.
Lithium battery is very environmentally unfriendly, and I want them to get out of that business as fast as possible.
No,
but
the
they've committed deeply to it by investing in Nevada, so I don't know.
If I'm not mistaken, they don't make the battery. Is that right?
They're about to.
Okay.
They're about to mine for... The reason they are located outside of Reno, Nevada, is that that's one of the only places in the United States where you can mine lithium.
Does anyone else have a long or short they want to throw out?
I got one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. Jeans.
Wow. That's great.
Okay.
Well, I go long on jeans.
Long on jeans forever.
I'm buying everything.
I'm short
reason.
On jeans.
You're short on jeans.
I think that it's sort of an arbitrary quirk of fashion and regular daily life that people think that blue, rough-hewn pants are what generally everyone is supposed to wear generally every day. I think that's insane. And when we look back in 100 years, we'll identify a whole 60, 70 year stretch with, oh yeah, those blue rough pants everyone wore from like 1940 to 2015. I just think like, I like them, but why over black cotton pants?
Strong case, interesting thinking here as a counterpoint. Jeans have been around since at least the 1800s.
Yeah, they're not going away yet.
And I think like casual, yes, we're going casual.
People are only getting more casual. But
why
in
is
the workplace.
That casual?
Anything's going to be like, we're going to start wearing PJs to work.
No, that'll not. Be PJs not. Right. Compare it to sweatpants. PJ's jeans right. are very low.
You could go long on sweatpants too, but denim is no one's saying, you know.
Traditionally comfy.
Sweatpants is a penny stock. It might go up a little.
Denim has its origins in workwear. Denim was supposed to be durable.
Yeah, we don't do that kind of work anymore. It's being automated.
But it's very reductive.
I'm not in the mines.
You want to go into the the vestigial world of fashion, and why do we still do anything?
Guys, I'm going to switch us into another debate, because I think it's time.
All right.
And this is going to be...
have a hot topic. That's all I ask.
I got something. I don't know. We'll have to see. But we're gonna split up into teams here. Okay. On the one side... taking the pro, I'm going to have Steve and BJ, okay? On the other side, taking the con, I'm going to have Dave and John.
I'm ready.
Are you ready? I'm not going to put a timer on this one. I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it evolve and develop.
Wow. A natural.
Okay. The topic, who's delivering the opening statement on the
Beach.
Pro side?
Let's have Beach do it.
BJ's going to do it, okay? The topic is McDonald's more good than bad.
I'm going to start by... appealing to the listeners before I appeal to the people in the room. I'm going to give you a hypothetical. We go back in time and we press a button that means there was never McDonald's. We never had McDonald's in America. I know that the visceral reaction of all the listeners on Serious Insight, the podcast, thinks, oh no, don't hit that button. No. McDonald's is a good part of the fabric of American life, period. Beyond that, I can take it kind of to an intense place, but Healy, I want to know if you have any other sort of bedrock arguments to bring. My first simple one is just we all know that McDonald's is a good thing, but I guess that's an emotional argument.
More when I think of McDonald's, joy, road trips, childhood, getting a Sunday, getting a burger. Yeah, McDonald's is bad for you. At some point, you grow out of it. You put away childish things, but it's always there for you to go back to. It's safe. It's comforting. It's a safe space for homeless people can use the bathroom there. The coffee is excellent. These are all like McDonald's has become basically like an emergency community center, an emergency roadside station, a place of comfort and security across the country. McDonald's is great.
McDonald's is great.
I'll start by, if it's okay, John, and you can jump in whenever. I'll start by refuting this basic premise. Just because people would say, oh no, to the idea that you could retroactively go back in time and eliminate something doesn't mean that it's more good than bad. You could say the same thing for just like sugar. If I could say to you, we could go back in time and we'd get rid of sugar.
No, I feel relieved. I'll let you have your...
Okay, well, a lot of people, I think, would feel relieved that McDonald's would be gone because they wouldn't be tempted to indulge in fast food. But I think most people would say, like, you're getting rid of sugar. When I want it to be there, I want to at least have the option of having it. That doesn't mean that sugar is more good than bad. We all know it's refined sugar especially is more bad than good for you. Not coincidentally, sugar happens to be in abundance at a place like McDonald's. The real reason that McDonald's is more bad than good is because it's unhealthy. And there are more insidious things about McDonald's, including the fact that they have for decades now specifically targeted their marketing and their whole iconography towards children. There is really nothing more despicable than the act of trying to, from the very logo reminiscent of Mother's Bosom to the Playlands that were so ubiquitous in our childhood. These were specific acts by the McDonald's Corporation to try to hook children in at a young age. Also look at, of course, the mascots, the Hamburglar, these fun toys, the Happy Meals, all of these efforts to hook children in to the tastes, the fats, the salts, the sugars of McDonald's and to keep them lifelong customers. That is really an assault on the health of our youth. And for that reason alone, McDonald's is more bad than good. It also, by the way, last point I'll make, happens to be one of, if not the largest employer of part-time employees in America, and they have time and time again fought every effort by their employees to unionize or to work for better standards. That I would say that that alone in and of itself is a reason that they're more bad than good. And that's the end of my opening statement.
Your inability, guys, BJ, Steve, to see this from any other point of view is a testament to how impressionable you were when you were first introduced to McDonald's. No child should just have this this implanted into them, just imprinted on them, just without any other point of view. You can't imagine. This is almost like this is an affront on your family. If you investigate the way you feel right now, it's like someone is telling you that your parents. You're having this response as if someone's telling you your parents are unhealthy.
The McDonald's is everywhere. It's a part of all of our lives. It always has been.
We're saying that this food that is not good for you. is not good for you and was sold to you in a way that is nefarious, in a way that still has its talons in you in one way or another. It's ultra consumerist at an age where you should, you know, there's no accident that it's six. It's a wonderful year, but that's also when you are the most crammed with this concept of false joy, the sort of commercialized joy. What do you have to do to get this toy? You have to down something you don't like eating.
Don't like eating?
What? Are you crazy?
Don't you down something that you like eating, but that is terrible for you.
I don't think you...
Terrible?
What's good about McDonald's? Okay, let me ask you that. Healy, you said the most benevolent description of a McDonald's I've ever heard is that it's an emergency community center.
Sure.
Which, compare McDonald's and the people there and the camaraderie of the group there to any other community center, and I think you'll find that it pales in comparison. What else is good about McDonald's
other than the convenience? The fact that you bring this up, that you've turned this on us, that the most popular business in America, we have to defend that it's good instead. You have to bring this back.
Well, obviously, by the way, among some of the other most popular businesses in America are oil companies and defense contracted companies. Not all big companies
happen
to be good.
They do not compare to McDonald's.
Okay. I think they do compare to McDonald's.
First of all, separate battle, but I drive a car, I need oil, and I sleep easy at night because the United States is a powerful military. So like that's a whole separate discussion that you can't just act
as a powerful economy, which is largely due to McDonald's.
Let's say I just arrived in this country. I'm a 40-year-old man from Nigeria. I have no association with McDonald's from my childhood. What is McDonald's to me? It's brightly lit. It's a clean, well-lighted place.
It's affordable.
Clean. It's affordable.
It's disoriented.
It's reliable.
It's democratic.
It's democratic. The people behind the counter are likely to look like
Best arguments for McDonald's is the lighting, then I think, proven that it's more bad than good.
No, that's absolutely
first
not.
Of all,
one
not
element
only is,
of
it's not a place
bright,
to begin. In every town in America,
no
there's a well-lit, safe place.
There is no paucity of brightly lit establishments in America, and in fact, the lighting at McDonald's is fluorescent and
abhorrent.
Dave, you are driving in Texas, your child is screaming in the back seat. You need to just have a break, have a minute's peace. You see a McDonald's. Are you not relieved? Is the sign not like the sign of the cross?
No,
to
it's
a
not.
Christian?
You know, what? I've been in that very experience a little bit. I know I've been over talking. I'll let you guys open this up in a minute, but I have been in that very experience with my cousins when we were on a road trip, and they said, you know, there were nowhere to eat for miles around, and they had two young kids, and the only place to eat was the McDonald's, and they said, The emotion that they had was not at all relief. It was, I would say, disappointment and what's the word I'm looking for? Almost surrender. What else am I going to do? I hate this. I have to do this, but I hate it. I'm about to feed my kids shit. Food that is terrible for them, and I wish I had planned better.
Were the kids happy? Was the experience a happy
one? This is an incredibly skewed perspective. You're saying not only that you're not even giving it guilty pleasure,
it's
which I could imagine your side to perhaps argue. You're saying it's a guilty tragedy for these people?
Yes.
Let me float this by you. I have a couple of points.
The
Number
most
one,
popular food in America
I believe,
is not enjoyable to anyone. You think
exactly.
That's how the economy works?
I believe that your brain, there's a disconnect in your brain that does not realize that you don't like McDonald's. You have had it impressed upon you for so long that McDonald's is good that you have actually forgotten or lost contact with the part of you that decides whether you like it or not. So at a time in your life when you were forming things in your frontal lobe as to what you liked and what you didn't in the decision-making process, the individualizing from the rest of the world, McDonald's got inside of you, and it's almost a fact a natural fact, your brain cannot even fathom being wrong. That McDonald's is not good. Number one,
okay.
It's not even good and you're fighting like it is. Number two, it makes you sick when you eat it, and somehow or another, you True. Come to terms with it. You go, well, I ate McDonald's. How many times have you heard someone say, oh, my stomach is totally jacked up, I ate McDonald's. And they know that they were going to feel that way. They ate McDonald's, they do feel that way, and they accept it. This is a sickness. Anytime somebody, if this were alcohol, you would say they were an alcoholic.
Okay, first of all, BJ and I have not brought up the food. We've only been talking about McDonald's
you
as a
keep bringing crucial up the food. You keep trying to tell us
space.
How much we like the food.
It's not well, a crucial the food, social space.
You tried to, you attacked my cousins and said that it wasn't even a guilty pleasure.
Has anyone
that
ever
had.
Died of sickness at McDonald's? Yeah, probably, but like basically it's safe, reliable food.
Are you
There's a
kidding?
Wide
Are
spectrum
you really
of the
going
menu?
To claim that like the millions of people who suffer from heart
years,
disease in this country are that McDonald's doesn't share some of the blame for that?
50 years
out
of your science has created this food that tastes good, is satisfying. Yeah, it's not the perfect.
There's a difference between tasting
good. I'm sorry, guys. We can't all go to Cafe Gratitude every
centers.
Week, okay?
I don't
McDonald's
like Cafe Gratitude. This isn't about Cafe Gratitude.
Pulling the elitist card is not going to work.
Not going to work? Says the person no. taking the anti-McDonald's no. argument.
It's not elitist. Not the way we're doing it. You know, if you weren't able to point to something scientific that said McDonald's wasn't good for you because they made sort of engineered their own food and you didn't have a point of reference, let's use a salad as a point of reference. A salad is a pretty uniformly made meal. Mm-hmm. It has lettuce in it. A salad is a salad, right? It's a control group. A McDonald's salad is one of the most disgusting food products I've ever seen in my life. And that is not hard to make, and yet they fail time and time again at making a decent salad.
Do they fail, or is it an effective, efficient corporation that knows no one's coming to us for the fucking salad?
Well, then I don't want a company
that
creates...
This is a
creates,
hamburger joint.
Well, then
make
why
fries
are they offering
and hamburgers.
The salad? This is a horrible reasoning for
they
why
They offer
salad.
Salads for Dave's complicated, twisted, convoluted on itself internal reasoning.
But they should
I'm
still
getting,
figure a way
don't
to
put that
to
on me. I've never ordered a salad at McDonald's.
Interesting, though, you haven't argued that the McDonald's salad is a pretty
you
disgusting
get a salad.
First of all, I've never had a salad at McDonald's. As far as I know, it's fine.
It's I have, and it was good. It was the apple walnut salad. It was good.
It's a wilted sort. They have a. It's the lettuce is soft and warm and wilted and brown.
That's probably because they don't move a lot of salad units. If they just gave you a sack of the shredded lettuce, it would be fine. It would be adequate.
One of the pros for McDonald's is they move so much of it that there's no way, as bad as it is, that it could be expired because
they're
of how much.
They're not moving salads. You guys are being difficult by demanding
Coca-Cola
salads from
is
McDonald's.
Is more good than bad? I mean, it's interesting you brought up Coke earlier as an American icon that you don't consume but that you like. I'm one of the last people in America or one of the last people I know who still drinks regular Coca-Cola.
You're
I try
not one
not
of the
to.
Last. It's very, very popular.
I said people I know. Do you know other people in our peer group who drink Coca-Cola?
I'll take a Coke every once in a while. I had one today.
I happen to love Coca-Cola. I know that it's... I think it's delicious.
What a weirdo.
But I... Okay,
how
I
uncommon.
Know that it's more bad than good. Same with McDonald's, which,
what
by
do
the
you
way,
mean it's more. Why do you get yourselves into this convoluted?
It's got 39
moral
grams of sugar in every serving.
Okay,
that's why it's bad.
You,
it's not like difficult to understand. It's killing us.
It's not
it's bad for
you.
Your body.
You're fine.
And again,
you're going to die at age 90,
the,
like everybody
by the
else.
Way,
and
a point
along
that
the
you guys
way,
have not addressed
at
all is that everyone who works at McDonald's, except for upper management, is underpaid and is being suppressed from unionizing. Which is unconscionable for the as you said, one of the largest employers in America, to not give their workers basic working rights. How do you answer that?
I don't know a ton about the union politics of McDonald's.
Okay, you
it
know
sounds
that
like
not
you're
unionized.
Pretending to.
I'm not at all pretending to.
A lot of people.
You've read Fast Food Nation. You understand how they work.
A lot of people that come through McDonald's are teenagers, part-time kids. It's not a like career that
and
like
a steel
worker.
And are you saying that teenagers and kids don't have the same rights that workers in their 30s and 40s have? That's your excuse for them for suppressing the workers of McDonald's? Is that they're kids? Of all the people who should be given rights and fair wages, the children of our country, the people who are
Let
trying to pay
you,
off their student debt,
went to work at
give them $15 an hour, give them a living wage.
If your kid went to work at McDonald's, would you think my kid is going to a safe, steady, working environment? They're going to get paid regularly. If your kid goes to, would you rather have your kid go to work for McDonald's or go to work for like a landscaper?
Landscaper.
Like some guy
you've
never met.
Are you out of your
mind?
Here's
the question.
Your kid comes to you in 12 years or in 20 years and says, I got a job at McDonald's. You're really happy. I'm flipping burgers, Daddy.
You can argue. You can argue about the minimum wage of any company in any context in America. You can argue about the nutrition of any food. in any context of any fast food or other establishment in America.
Yes, but a lot of foods are good. McDonald's isn't. And a lot of companies have good wages and McDonald's doesn't.
What is McDonald's in its essence, apart from all of these things we're talking about? McDonald's is a brand. McDonald's is a brand. And if, let's say, McDonald's food is healthy. If I told you that McDonald's is moving towards non-GMO everything and non-antibiotic everything,
every move
that McDonald's makes by even one degree towards health, and there are some profound ones, has an incredibly profound effect on the nutrition of many people because the brand is so powerful.
You're acknowledging how dangerous the company of McDonald's is. You're basically asking me to give credit to McDonald's for slightly correcting their very unhealthy food.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you why. Which is absurd. I'm going to tell you why. Because people's base taste that you are angry at McDonald's for exploiting has been this way since the dawn of evolution. It's saying that you are into this chicken nugget is like saying you're into sex or violence or any other thing that has evolved.
Yeah, and McDonald's is an evil corporation for exploiting that.
So hold on.
I don't understand how that absolves them of the sin of feeding our country
or
unhealthy food.
Exploiting or monopolizing that. And then once they monopolize that, they can take you in any direction
that
they
want. If there was a country that monopolized war crimes and they suddenly they took over the world and committed nothing but atrocities for decades. And then they started occasionally not committing war crimes.
Since you brought up Coca-Cola,
they were more good than bad.
Since you brought up Coca-Cola,
yeah.
Do you know the company? And there's a big clue in the way I'm framing this question. The company that gives more clean water to third world impoverished people than any other distribution factor in the world.
I'm guessing it's either Coca-Cola or McDonald's.
It's Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Now, I'm impressed.
Do you think that makes them more good than bad?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you why. Because if Coca-Cola as a brand and as a company has evolved from something that sold cocaine, took out the cocaine, we're still able to maintain unbelievable sales with sugar. And then they were able to take those distribution methods and use it for clean water in the third world. That is a good company.
Great.
And imagine
that's
where
what
they're going to go next.
Doing. What's McDonald's
that's
doing?
Like McDonald's is doing the same thing with getting the entire world on
Ronald McDonald House is a private charity.
Now think not only what jobs people would be having, I ask you specifically
what McDonald's is doing that's similar to Coca-Cola giving clean water to other countries.
I know what foods they're moving towards because they put press releases out about it all the time. So when this company decides to do that, when you lock down the pure base evolved impulses of people, the bad instincts that you and I have to eat sugary, fatty food, when you lock those down and get their trust in that, you can then take those people by degrees anywhere. And a company that's not capable to do that, yes, it is noble, because where you're taking those people, if it's in a good place, which McDonald's is moving towards and which Coca-Cola
I just asked you to name anything that they're moving towards.
They're moving towards healthier meat than the majority of meat that people buy cheaply. That's a good thing.
Can I throw something in here?
Yes.
It's also still a show. The characters are dumb. Mary McCheese.
It's a good point. I gotta say, it's
character.
True. They're bad.
They're bad characters.
They're lame.
Look, this is some weird 70s like H.R. Puffin stuff. Like, it's really off.
Yeah, that's when they were on TV.
For a brand as big as McDonald's, the characters are phenomenally stupid.
Ronald is creepy. And they're campy. The fry guys don't
look, here's
say
what I've heard during this debate. I've heard Dave and John make a lot of points about how McDonald's could be better. And I agree. There's a million ways they could be better.
What are you competing with? Whole Foods?
The debate is,
what do you think the competition is
more good than bad? We have to win 51-49 good or bad. Every single person in America has taken comfort from going to a McDonald's, from having the treat at a McDonald's. We need little hits of sugar and fat in our life. We need hits of light, safe spaces in our life. We need hits of playpens, play zones. We need hits
of
safe...
Do you need a hit of some play zones?
We need safe hits of places to stop along the highway. McDonald's provides that for us. There's a million ways McDonald's could be better. But if I can sum up, and I hope BJ will add a little bit at the end here, but like, McDonald's is by far more good than bad.
I think it was a spectacular debate. So we were talking about the NFL earlier, and one of the stats that they use to demonstrate like kind of who's like why a game is going a certain way is possession time. And I'm gonna give this one to the con, first of all, just because I think that they won, you know, like, but I think there was a possession time thing that really, there was just dominant court time happening.
That's true.
They didn't let them get away with that.
Very impressed.
Mm. No, they earned it. They took it. They took the ball.
BJ, if someone is a student of McDonald's history, they're passionate about that, is there any films they could check out?
I would recommend, probably above all else, that you see the movie The Founder in theaters January 20th.
Oh, The Founder.
Which tells the exciting and complicated history of the moral compromises and maneuvering that led to the creation of the McDonald's we know today, starring Michael Keaton as Ray Kroc,
Nick Offerman
and John Carroll Lynch as the McDonald's brothers.
That sounds great.
And I play Harry Sonneborn, the first president of the McDonald's Corporation.
Can I ask you a McDonald's history question?
I mean, you can ask anything.
At the very beginning of all of this, was the first McDonald's a real piece of meat that had come off of a cow, ground up, put together on a piece of bread?
It still is. It's just
the first McDonald's.
There was no pink slime in the first McDonald's.
The first McDonald's was a real perfectionist standalone restaurant that had revolutionized the drive-thru. Mm-hmm. Which had been a real out of control teenager on roller skates dominated, messy, endless experience for people. And the McDonald's brothers had patented a system of fast food delivery for high quality food. They invented the paper wrapper. They invented the 1 minute or less. They invented all of these systems that are now part of the McDonald's brand. And then Ray Kroc discovered it, begged for the opportunity to franchise it, which they didn't want to do. They wanted to keep this one perfect restaurant. And Ray Kroc seduced and ultimately pressured and squeezed and sort of, I'd say, maneuvered them out, but, you know, in a underhanded way until it became the McDonald's we know today.
Well, guys, what a fantastic episode we just had. Big thanks to our guests, John and BJ.
Hey,
thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Guys were awesome.
Can't wait till next year.
We're the adversaries.
I've already graded myself.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week on The Great Debate. The Great Debate is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.